Cave Mill of Fulcher to one and all. This is your host, Paul Perdue, and this is the show called Talking Antiques. I hope you are all well, and I have my very good executive producer here, Matt. How are you today, Matt?
Doing very well, thank you, Paul.
Great, that's good. And Matt has been instrumental in keeping me on the straight and narrow on the show and making sure I do everything right and, you know, have the microphone close and, you know, don't say anything I shouldn't say. And, you know, before Matt, Leslie used to have a whip, but Matt just has to point his fingers. So, you know, I don't know which is worse, the finger or the whip. But it's very good to have you here today. And before we get started, I'd like to just thank my sponsors, Village Antiques. And, you know, Village Antiques is down in Biltmore Village. And they are an exceptional shop to go into. You can find anything and everything there. And they will help you, Terry and David. And I think Ginger is one of the girls there. And all you have to do is to say that you heard about them on Talking Antiques, which is also going to be on my Facebook page. And we also be podcasting the show. So there should be no reason why you can't find this show somewhere on the internet or listen to it on 1350 WZGM and Independent National Radio. So if you get a chance, go down to 755 Biltmore Avenue and call in to Terry and Dave and tell them that you're looking for a little bargain here and there and tell them the Irishman sent you. So thank you very much to Village Antiques for helping me along, keeping my show on the radio. Today we're just going to go over. I think the last show that we did was a little bit about marquetry, and it was quite interesting. People were interested in the marquetry aspect. Somebody had sort of asked, would I talk a little bit about tables, because they didn't know the difference between sofa tables, card tables, pie tables, stuff like that. So I thought maybe that I would talk a little bit about tables. So one of the earliest form of tables that even in America, basically, and in Ireland and England and Europe, was a gate leg table. And it was very simple. It just had, could either be a square top or a round top, and it'd have two leaves drop down. And when you lift up one of the leaf, you know, the rail would come out, and it'd be like a gate. You know, the English had this sort of like, you open up the gate, open it up that way. And normally they were made out of oak or walnut or ash or beech or something like that. And a lot of people ask me, why were they made out of them timbers or lumbers? And the reason was that in the big estates in Europe anyway, they would have their own workmen that would go out onto the estate, so to speak, and cut down an oak tree. And they would air dry it, which could possibly take a few years, and they'd plank it and whatever. And they would make the furniture from the wood that grew on the estate. In America, it was slightly different, but it was still, you know, during the time of the 1700s and all that, people would go chop down a tree. They would build a cabin out of the wood on their land, but they would also make the furniture. Particularly in America, it would be cherry, and it'd be sycamore, and it'd be walnut, black walnut, and stuff like that. So that basically is one of the reasons why tables were a great invention, in the sense that when the reason why tables more or less came into it was that, particularly after the War of the Roses in 1066 in England, people began to sort of settle down. That war went on for a long time, and people began to sort of settle down. They weren't warring all the time. And when they started to build their houses and stuff, they needed something to, instead of eating off the floor, you know, basically they needed to have something. So a table came up, and basically the first table was normally maybe 20 feet long. They'd cut down a tree and cut a 4-inch plank, thick plank, all the way down, and have benches on either side, and the whole the whole family, the whole tribe or whatever would get around the table and eat it. Maybe if you look at some of the old pictures of King Arthur or Robin Hood or something, you'd see, or the Vikings, you'd see the big long table. And that was the first form of sort of dining with your relatives, so to speak. You know, just make sure you didn't have your hand out in case you're going for that leg of chicken or something. Somebody would chop it off trying to get to the other leg. So the first set of tables were basically just slabs of wood up off the floor, off the dirt floor, and with a bench on either side or whatever. And then they began to get more sophisticated and get into, you know, smaller tables, smaller homes, stuff like that. So we came to the gate leg table. Another sort of a table particularly in the 19th century, was very, very fashionable, and also very fashionable in America, was a card table or a tea table. Now, I go into many antique shops, and I look at card tables and tea tables, and to be quite honest with you, some of the lesser-known antique shops don't know the difference between a card table and a tea table. And probably in the second half of the show, I might just tell you what the difference is, but I won't tell you now. And just to give you a little teaser on it, a card table or a tea table both fold over. They have two leaves, and the both leaves fold over, and you could turn it around. But we'll talk about what the difference is in the next half of the show. Of course, we have a sofa table. Now, people sort of say, "What is a sofa table?" Well, it quite simply is just a table that went behind the sofa. And it was sort of, it would have a fake drawer on one side, and it would have two fake drawers on one side and two drawers on the other side. But it would go up behind a big estate. And if you look at, we say, like Downton Abbey or something like that, you see the big settee there, and behind it would be a table. And the table would be beautiful, beautifully well made. But, I've no friends of mine that had tables like that in their shops. And when they try to open the drawer, they forget that they put the fake side out front. The people come in, try and open the drawer and wouldn't be able to do it. So that was a sofa table. And they were more or less, Victorians were very big into that. The early Victorians, late Victorians. And obviously they are quite big in America. There is a very good friend of mine who sort of gave up antiques here. He was big into it, particularly in American furniture and paintings and stuff like that. He was sort of getting out of it for a while, and he gave me a set of books called American Antique Furniture by, Edgar G. Miller Jr. And it's in two volumes. Now, these volumes were made or published in 1940, I think in the mid-40s, 30s, 40s. Actually, 1937 is when these books were produced. And it has everything conceivable about from the early states of the Americans in the furniture aspect. Everything about furniture, clocks, stuff, tables, what you name it. And anybody that's interested, now for me, as a person, even though I'm in my mid-50s, being an Irishman, I know about English, Irish and European, but I'm beginning to learn a little bit about American. I'm not comfortable yet enough talking as an authoritative figure, but I am going to get there eventually. But American Antique Furniture, a book for amateurs, have a look out for that, and you will be amazed how good your knowledge will build reading that book. There's a pair of them, but I find it quite good. Okay, you're listening to this show, Talking Antiques, on 1350 WZGM, Independent National Radio, and we're on the Facebook Talking Antiques page, and we will podcast this page, and I hope we will see you on the other side of the show. Oh, a cave major. Fáilte again. 100,000 welcomes for anybody that doesn't know what that means in Irish. I just want to thank everybody for listening to the show, and I just want to thank my sponsors, Village Antiques. Please go in there and have fun with them, and because they will gladly help you in any way they possibly can. And just tell them that we're listening to the Irishman, and that should get a little bit of a giggle out of them. So in the last part of the show, we were just talking about tables, and I'll continue on with our discussion of tables. But I just want you to just say that you're listening to this show on 1350 WZGM, which is independent actual radio, and you can hear us on the Facebook page of Talking Antiques. Or sorry, you can see me on the Facebook page of Talking Antiques. And you can listen to me on the podcast, which I am putting free podcasts on my Facebook page called Talking Antiques. Now, on the other segment of the show, I sort of was talking a little bit about card tables and tea tables, and I sort of left a little teaser out there. And I'm just going to ask Matt. Matt, do you know what the difference between a tea table and a card table is?
Tea table, I think, is it a lower to the ground kind of table and everything, whereas a card table might be higher elevation? Does it have to do with the height?
There is that element of it, but in this case, no, you're wrong.
Okay. Not the first time I've been wrong.
Thank God I know something. Now, normally in Victorian times, and maybe even earlier, or in the Empire period, which is the American period, they made a tea table and a card table in pairs. They made a pair of them. And they would be sort of like, they could be on a hallway, or they could be in a room. And the difference between the tea table is that when you open up a tea table, you open up the leaves and you turn them around, you lay it out flat, and it's all wood. That's a tea table. A card table goes the same way, but when you open it up, it has beige on it for playing cards. So that's the difference between a card table and a tea table made by the same company or made by the same person. And they were always done in pairs. And what has happened over the hundreds of years or generations is that they get separated or they get damaged, and you know, people just sort of get rid of one and keep the other and whatever. But that is basically, if you go into an antique shop and it says tea table and you open it up and it has green beige on it, well then you know it's a card table. If you go into an antique shop and it says card table, you open it up and it's all wood, then you know it's a tea table. So that's just a little bit of insider information for anybody that's interested in antique tea tables and stuff. Now, somebody might turn around and say, well, you know, they also made them that they had no beige in them. But technically, if you look at a card table, a poker table, what does it have? It had beige on it. It's like green, it can be blue, it can be whatever color. And that was the reason why would that. Another table. Well, one thing I want to go back to the sofa table with the fake drawers on the back of it. One thing I sort of forgot to mention was that if you look at a sofa table, it's longer and the grain runs front to back, and it has two small leaves at the end, just that they go and they drop down at the end, and the grain is running this way and it goes up to the edge of the sofa. Now I'm going to talk about a Pembroke table. The Pembroke table, was made during Chippendale style, which is in the Chippendale, Heppelwhite and Sheridan made these tables. Now Chippendale made them with heavy carving on them, or square. Heppelwhite made them in ovals, and Sheridan made them in ovals with inlay. So you had an oval table, and sometimes you get these most beautiful Pembroke tables when you open up. They have beautiful inlay in the middle. You know, that's a sort of Sheraton, or in the style of Sheraton. And the two leaves would drop down. But the thing that makes a Pembroke table, is it has a drawer at one end. Now, they were never called Pembroke tables at the time of Chippendale. He just called it an occasional table or whatever. Then the name Pembroke came into it, and nobody knows where the name Pembroke came, but of course with the English it's hard to know where anything comes with them. And, you know, if you look, if you can go onto Google and if you put in Pembroke table in, you will see some of the most beautiful looking table. I classify them as a beautiful table. And they could be classed or they could be used in the Victorian times when they put up the two leaves, you would have your tray of tea. So in one way you were right, Martin, a little bit, but you were wrong in the definition of what I was trying to talk about at the other thing. Another type of table that we have it is a pier table. A pier table would normally go into a, like you've often heard of that shop Pier.
Pier One.
Pier One, yeah, Pier One. It's the same. It's spelt the same way. P-E-I-R, pier. It's a pier table. Normally goes into the hallway, and. I was talking to David in Village Antiques yesterday, and I was looking at a beautiful pier table in the French design, and it was veneered all over, and he said that this one was quite a rare one. He said there was only one other one that he knew of that was up in Boston. This one was made in Boston, and he said the other one was $125,000, and this one was absolutely exceptional. I seen the tag on it, but I didn't want to go down and look and see what price was on it. I didn't want to, you know, show my hand that I didn't know. But I have restored a fair number of these tables. And one thing that what makes them exceptional, if you have a big hallway and you come in, you have your pier table, you put your bag and you put your stuff down on it. But on the back of it, it always had a mirror. So it gives extra depth. When you go by, it doesn't blot out. It allows the light to hit underneath it and it be turned or stuff like that. So that is another form of table that there is. Now, there is one other table called... One of my favourite tables to have is what is called a tripod table. Or a table that is on a tripod. And people would say to me, why are they not on four legs and why are they only on three legs? Well, there's a very simple explanation for that. In the early times, floors were not level. And a tripod table is stable on any given floor. But if you tried to have a table with four legs on an uneven floor, what happens? You're there trying to push a piece of paper or a piece of cardboard or a bit of wood under it. But on a tripod table... The three legs are balanced. You've only a matter of turning them and they'll find level ground. They can be called a tip-up table. In the Victorian times, they would have the tripod table, but it would be on what is called a birdcage attachment, which the top would move around, but it would also tip up. And the reason it would tip up would they would push it into the corner and you'd have this beautiful veneer or figure of the wood shining or showing out so that people, when it was not in use, could be there as an ornamental piece. Another table which was very, very sought after was a pie crust table. Now, there's pie crust tables here, and one of the ways that you can tell a genuine pie crust table from an ungenuine or a later edition pie crust table is that the genuine one, was the pie crust was carved out of the one piece of wood, where at the later editions, they would put on the wood around the edge and carve it out or machine it out. So if you look at the early ones, you will see that you can see where the glue marks are, where they glued it down. Now that's an indication that it's not as early as it should be. If somebody's trying to tell you it's genuine, then it's not. So, we're getting near the end of the show. I just would like to thank everybody for listening to the show. And you're listening to it on 1350 WZGM, which is Independent National Radio. You can hear us on the podcast. And you can see us on Talking Antiques on my Facebook page. And I would like to say slán. And I hope that we meet again soon.